Welcome to the At Leisure Podcast. This is a show about sports, video games, movies, just basically things we do with our leisure time. My name is Brett, and we are back on the Ranger Podcast. We're going to wrap it up just this series, maybe just talking baseball for a while, but what a way to end it. We've got our other Ranger experts, Brady and Gage. Guys, it's been about 2 weeks since the Texas Rangers won the World Series.
Yeah.
Has it washed over you yet? They won the World Series, man.
Yeah, speechless.
The Texas Rangers.
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just been an awkward silence because it's just chills at this point.
Dude, it's amazing. I can't. I mean, I guess it's washed over me, but like every now and then throughout the week, I'll just be like, dude, Texas Rangers, we are the champions right now, man. And it's a great feeling. I mean, after our last two attempts, I just didn't know if we'd ever be there, man. Especially not this year. I just exceeded expectations in every way.
For me, I got a few Astros fans, so I keep telling them we have the same amount of rings you guys have now. So
we're absolutely. the record books right now say they have two, but, you know, they might get that. They had the biggest cheating scandal in the history of sports, so they might take that first one away.
They admitted to it.
So.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they're probably like, oh, we're still y'all are still thinking about us even when y'all win y'all's big game. And that's right, because we had to beat them to get the World Series. And honestly, I don't even want to spend that much of this episode talking about this World Series because, honestly, other than one game, we looked like we were clearly the better team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but in that fourth or in that fifth game when the bases kept getting full and Valdi just kept getting out of jams, they weren't scoring. I looked at Danny, my wife, and I was like, I think we might do this. You know, like they are getting broken emotionally because they can't score the big run.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what they've done all year. They'll get people on base and then they'll score one run.
In the Diamondbacks, right?
The Diamondbacks, yeah.
Yeah.
They just put pressure on you. And so I think the first couple of times Evaldi gets out of it and they're just like, what do we do? Like, this is how we've scored runs all year. We're not here to hit the big home runs like they are. And so the Diamondbacks, I just felt like you said, they got their spirits broken because they couldn't get that clutch hit they needed.
Yeah, starting pitching was fantastic. I mean, besides that one game, across the board, man, I just loved it. I loved it from all standpoints. I couldn't complain at all, which I know we'll talk about here in a minute, what we really loved about it. And I know Brett will start us off with that, what he's got. But, I mean, speechless. I've been a Rangers fan, of course, my whole life, just like you guys. And, you know, whenever I was watching in 10 and 11, even went to the ALCS game. Our DS game in 2010, like you're talking about in the last podcast. I mean, it came so close, one strike away, and to get deflated, and then now here we are on top of the world, and we're gonna, you know, we had the parade, and we're gonna have the opening ceremony next year, and against the Cubs, that's all. And so it's nothing gets better than this, nothing.
It really doesn't. Another thing about the series I want to say is, this was a small ball team, and they made it to the World Series, and good for them. But I was so happy every time they laid down a bunt. I'm like, they're giving us outs. Evaldi cannot find an out, and they're just giving us one. And I'm like, thank you, you know? And it was just helping, so I'm all about team never bunt, man. Dingers forever.
Yeah. Going back to the unbelievable feeling, I love, if you haven't listened to it, y'all should go listen to what Eric Nadell said. But he was talking about calling the final game. Someone asked him, what are you going to say when y'all win? And he kind of thought about it and he's like, I think I just got to remind Rangers fans, they're not dreaming, because like it's just after what happened with Nelson Cruz, it's just like, is this real? And so his call was just like, Rangers fans, you are not dreaming. This actually happened. And it's a chills, man. Since
if you guys haven't seen that video, somebody took a video of him, but like behind him, of him making that call, and it gives you chills every time you watch it. Even if you're just a baseball fan, like him just calling that, I absolutely loved it.
He stands up and he's given the call, and then he sits down, and you can like see like the weight of it off of him. You know, you can see the emotional just release. It's so cool. And imagine that guy. He has been the play-by-play guy for the Rangers for 45 years. 45 years. Like, this has been his life. He's seen every single game. And this is I love the Rangers, but this has been a poverty franchise. Like, he has watched so many losing seasons. It's like committing to your life to a TV show where you always know the bad guy's going to win. You know, it's like literally he's missed family time. He has been there. Like, we think it's important to us, but imagine watching 45 years of baseball and talking about it almost every single game. It is just incredible. And like, I don't know. I just love it for those kind of people. Like, I love it for us, but I think it is so cool for him. He even said, like, I didn't think this would ever happen in my lifetime, you know? And you could see it on that call where he was like,
yeah,
I thought I was going to die before this happened, you know? Like, it's crazy. Cause like you said, like, he couldn't believe it. He'd just come to the realization that, hey, the team that I love is never going to win. And, you know, we kind of all, in a way, had come to that realization.
And when's it going to happen?
Yeah. So, I don't know. He was just such a good encapsulation of, like, every Rangers fan who really has put in the time to watch this team. And, I don't know, it was so cool.
Yeah, it was also fun to look at all the, like, reactions on social media from different people. And even my friends who posted their reactions, I had the same exact reaction. Like, there was one of my friends who has, of course, is a little kid, a little baby, and he had to do, like, a silent explosion reaction, you know? And so he's just being excited as he can. I saw another guy on social media just, like, had to run outside and scream because his little baby was sleeping as well. Like, for me, I don't have a little baby, so I just woke up all my neighbors. Like, I just screamed on top of my lungs. And so I just shout for joy, jumped out of the bed, just was like, you know, that high feeling that I'm still feeling today. Like, if I saw, like, something on a t-shirt, like, in Dick's Sporting Goods, I'm like, that's us. Like, we did it, man. Like, that's actually, it's still real. You know, pinch me. I'm still dreaming, I feel like.
Yeah. And then the next thought is, I gotta have that.
I was about to say, exactly. How much merch has we all bought? I've got a hat. I've got two shirts. I bought a baseball card pack of all the players.
There you go. Where'd you get that?
I've got a pennant. Dude, as soon as they won it, they had a card pack for all the players. It only had 15, but it was really cool, dude. It's awesome.
I need to get one.
Got a Josh Young rookie card. I was like, I'm about to get addicted to card collecting. Holy cow.
Of course you got a Josh Young rookie card.
Dang straight.
Tech fans.
All right, so first question I'm going to ask y'all is, what is the thing that's going to stick to you most about this team? Like, what are you going to remember the most when you look back on this team? Like, obviously, time fades your memory. Like, even the 2011 team, I have highlights, but I don't remember the whole journey. But what do you think is going to really stick with you about this team?
I'll take it. I'll say, for me, it's the leadership position. And also, a big key thing that even they kept saying was resiliency. Like, never stop. Next man up, you know, hand the baton off type situation. And so leadership for me, and that leadership goes to, hashtag, I always say hashtag Bruce Bochy. I mean, that dude always even keel at the end of the dugout, him and Mike Maddox, which I've always loved Mike Maddox. I love that we got him back. I'm such a huge fan of the way that he goes about his job, you know, his demeanor and everything. And both those guys' relationships with the players, it trickles down into the players, right? When stuff goes south, like, hey, we're good, you know, next man up, right? Resiliency. And that's what they kept saying whenever you watch the World Series, went on the stage, and Corey Seager was talking after he got his MVP trophy and all that good stuff. I mean, talking about resiliency. And so, for me, it's those two. It's leadership starting from the top down. I think Chris Young has a huge role in it, too, for the way that his demeanor is and the way that he, you know, of course, being a former player, you know, he knows the struggles and the struggle of the long season and all that stuff, that he's able to go out there and help, you know, the manager, all the coaches, players, everything along with that. And then Ray Davis being an awesome owner, just saying, hey, we're going to do whatever it is. So I think leadership from top all the way down. And then resiliency for the players, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll piggyback on that. I saw a video maybe a few days ago, actually, and it was just, they were like, this is how a winning team acts. And they showed a maybe 4-minute highlight reel of just interviews where they asked the player, hey, how did you do such and such? Or, like, did you know you were so great in this role or whatever? And they were always deflecting the questions of, like, hey, I have great teammates. Hey, I couldn't do this without my teammates. Hey, you know, it's like all about the team. And they're like, I'm so happy for this team. I think this team is amazing. And it's like, you could tell, like, they really built a for each other mentality kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes from leadership for sure. So that's awesome. I think for me, the thing I'm going to remember most about on the field is defense, man. Like, I've never watched a team and felt so confident that they're going to make the right play. I feel like after watching all this years of just very subpar baseball teams, I got conditioned to like expect an error game almost at least. And so to like be so confident, like if the other team hits the ball, we're going to make the routine play. And sometimes more often than not, we're going to make the spectacular play. I mean, in this World Series, we were the first team to have zero errors in a 5-game stretch of the World Series since, well, one of three teams to ever do it. It was us, the Tampa Bay Rays in 2020, and then the New York Yankees in 1937. Those are the only teams to have a 5-game stretch of no errors in the World Series. So that's incredible. And I can even think of some plays like Corey Seager, Josh Young, Evan Carter, Marcus Semien. They all had like highlight reel worthy plays to like, like they were clutch plays that won games for us. And I don't know, it was fun. Like watching baseball sometimes, watching when your team is not batting is hard because it's not like other sports where you could have a pick six or like you could have a steal, like a breakaway dunk, you know, kind of thing. Like in baseball, nothing good can happen for your team when you are on defense. But it was still like beautiful to watch them make plays that saved games. Even Tavares, not in this one, but like making that robbing home run catch. Jordan. It was just like they just did so many things that were so much fun to watch on the defensive end. It's going to stick with me, I think, of how good this team was defensively.
A little tiny side note on your defense is that it's been so good to where the thought of us being one strike away and missing a routine fly ball over our heads in right field, not catching it, was out the window. So that's kind of
not true at all for me. If they hit it to right field, I was going to poop my pants. Not a chance.
I'm glad that you felt that way.
Yeah. As good as we were, I was still – I mean, still having.
I thought a demon was going to come up and trip.
Yeah, angels in the outfield, baloney.
That's just me putting that stuff in the past. That's all that's doing. It's just me putting that in the past, and now we're here, you know.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's kind of like what Gage was saying, but I'm going to say the composure of everyone. We had a lot of young guys that had to step up, and I think it goes back to the leadership that Gage was talking about, but they don't even look phased out there. I mean, that was the story with Evan Carter. Like, he's just the rookie phenom that he goes up there and he steps in the batter's box and you're going to almost have to throw him 5 pitches to get to the action pitch, because you get him down 2 strikes, he'll work it to a full count still. And Josh Young, I think it was the final game of the World Series where were we up 1-0 going into the ninth, or were we like 2-0 or something?
Yeah, we were 1-0. Only had Carver's RBI hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Josh Young gets the single right over the pitcher. I don't remember which game this was, but anyways, it's in the World Series. It's late in the game, and Josh Young steps on the plate, and he hits a line drive single right over the pitcher. And
stay within yourself.
For a rookie, that's – that's impressive to be able to, like, you're in the World Series right now, your rookie season, and you're going to step in there in a clutch situation and just give your team a chance there. And sure enough, we rallied around it and we scored him and a few other that inning. And I just felt like regardless of veteran or our rookie guys, there's just composure. And that goes to the bullpen, who was terrible all year. And then we get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to remember that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're getting out of jams and stuff, and they're not creating jams. It's just mind-blowing. Like, how did we go from just the worst relief pitching in the league almost to being
– Not almost.
The worst. I couldn't remember. I didn't want to –
We were the worst.
We historically had the most blown saves historically ever. Yeah, and that was a strength in the playoffs. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and Leclerc in the playoffs, he's just like, no, I'm going to be Mariano Rivera out here. No one's doing anything.
Spores is crazy.
Man. Yeah, Spores also. It was just the composure out of a team, which goes back to leadership like Gage was talking about. But I think that's what will stand out to me the most.
Yeah, and you can take that to the game level, like, you can micro it to like individual batters, but you can also say like them losing the AL, you know, West that they talked about so many times and then still like picking themselves up and just playing baseball and winning all these games on the road. Just so much composure there. And then to blow it like they did against the Astros and then come back and still win it. Like, you're right. Composure. This team was composed somehow, some way.
Yeah, I'm also going to remember the – speaking on that real quick, Brett, talking about going down from the AL West to winning it all, I'm going to remember the run. You know what I mean? Like that undefeated there for a while. And, of course, the – was 11-0 on the road. I mean, I'm going to remember the – you know, the run that we had in general, like just the overarching, like if we step back a little bit, like, you know, from 30 yeah. feet, look at the whole thing. I'm going to remember the run.
Yeah.
Like, of course, all the little details like the leadership and the composure and the defense, it all plays into it. But the overarching thing is like, man, we dominated.
Yeah. This stat. So the Rangers became the first team to win 13 postseason games. That's because they expanded the playoffs. So we had to win 13 games to win the whole thing. They also were the first club of any four of the major professional sports in North America to win 11 road games in a single postseason. So like the other four sports that are like the other four major sports, nobody has won that many road games in a postseason. That's crazy. The Rangers are the only team to ever do that.
Awesome. That, when you say that, it's like, talking about the Texas Rangers? Yeah. Like, yeah. Like
our Texas Rangers.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And no, some other tidbits that I thought were incredible. So only 2 years ago, the Rangers went 60-102. Statistically, that turnaround is the greatest in Major League history. Only two other teams had lost 100 games 2 years and then won it in like 1914. It was the Braves, and then in 1969, the Mets. And they both lost 101 games. We lost 102 games. So technically, greatest turnaround in the history of MLB in 2 years.
No, that's crazy. That's crazy. Plus having, it was a Ranger duo to have top three in AL MVP voting as well. Like, that's never happened before.
Do you mean the trio of Ohtani?
yeah, exactly, baby. Hey, we'll get to that in just a second. Don't worry. I like what you're doing, though.
Sorry, one more thing to remember. Scratch everything I said. Corey Seager has emotion.
Yeah.
Finally.
Oh, man.
I would have never thought, but he shows emotion, and, you know, I love it.
It makes it better. When Corey Seager shows emotion, I get chills. I'm like, oh, it's on now. Things are real.
It's like... Yeah, things are serious when he shows emotion.
It's like when you're watching like a movie and the mentor finally shows like he steps up to like like win the battle or something, you know, you're like, "Oh, here comes the you really did it now." You know? Yeah. It's just so cool.
Now, when he chucked the bat down, and then the picture of him jumping up in the air with his hand, his fist down the middle, just screaming. I mean, that's amazing. It's because it's not just Adolis. Because Adolis is one of those guys that's going to show emotion. He's just that type of guy. He's the type of fun guy that does that, you know? And he's just going to do it. But, I mean, whenever
it's awesome in its own way. Yeah,
exactly. It's when the quiet guy, like, it's always quiet ones you watch out for. Like, whenever he does something, it's like, oh, these guys are going to win it. You just woke up to a sleeping giant, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe the one that made me, like, feel even more, though, was when Marcus Semien hit his home run in the last game. And he rounds the base, and he's just jumping and yelling. And they interviewed him later, and he said, that's the most emotion I've ever shown on a baseball field. He's like, I didn't really know what to do. I just knew, like, in that moment, that probably just sealed the deal. Like, we are World Series champions.
Yeah. I think that also speaks to, like, what type of heart that this team had. We talk about the family and the cohesiveness, I mean, and the leadership. The type of heart that these guys had and how much they really wanted it for this organization, for the fans like us, you know, for Ray Davis, everybody. I mean, I think it just talked about just us saying that, I think it talks to the heart that these guys had and what type of mentality, what type of goal they had to start the year. Like, hey, this is what we're going to be like, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to just go from there, you know?
Yeah, and still talking about Semien, too. When Adolis went down in game four with that injury, I guess it was like his
oblique,
yeah. Man, he had 8 RBIs after that. Like, he stepped it up. He was like, oh, Garcia's down. I guess I'm going to be Garcia now.
I got to do something now.
It was crazy. It was weird. But he made a run at the World Series MVP because he had 8 RBIs after that. You know, it was crazy. But they gave it to the right guy with Seager. But it was great to see Semien. And I bet it felt so good for him, too, because he's like, I did something. I really contributed to this win now. You know, because he would have won, and everyone would remember that he bat 150 in the postseason. You know, like if he hadn't stepped on the gas there at the end, I'm sure he would have been fine. But you know, in his head, that would have been back there.
I also feel like, to add on to that, I also feel like because they built this team around him and Semien, like it was like a, hey, like I was able to come here and accomplish something that hadn't been done before. You know, like I'm not trying to be an I person instead of a team person, but you know what I mean? It's like that, maybe that weight's lifted off the shoulders. And so that
talking about Seager or Semien?
Yeah, Seager. I guess both, essentially, you know? Because, you know, they built a team around those two guys. When we first got those two guys, I mean, they're the anchor, they're the foundation of the whole thing that we're building. And I think getting to that point and them showing that emotion in the end was like a, hey, we did what we came here to accomplish, like what to do.
In year two.
Yeah. Like, we went through tough seasons and 102 loss season. Been to the ringer, right? And then now we're on the up. We're kind of a questionable year, but we were able to, you know, next man up mentality and do what we came here to accomplish to do. And now going into, I guess what we'll talk about here in a minute is, you know, now, hey, let's defend this bad boy.
For sure. I guess one more point before we, or not point, one more talk before we wrap it up and talk about maybe some next year ideas. Man, what did this mean to y'all? Like, what were you feeling? Like, what was this is a kind of a crazy thing for your team to win a championship. I don't know about you, Gage, but for me and Brady, I mean, the Mavs in 2011 were probably the only other time. And I'm an NBA fan. I enjoy the NBA. I pay attention to it, but it is not the level of fandom I have for the Texas Rangers, you know? So it's like, I really loved that championship and it was the only taste of my team winning anything. But this was, it was something special. And I mean, for me, just thinking about it, I mean, it takes me back to all those times I've been in the stands watching this team play and all the times that I've been with friends and family. It makes me think of my granddad and all the times, like, he would have loved this. If he'd have been here, he'd have loved this, you know? And it's like, there's so many people who never got to experience this. And I just think about, I don't know, all the times I was in the batting cage with my dad and we'd have the Rangers game on in the car and, you know, we'd be like, some of my favorite memories ever are because of baseball and because of the Texas Rangers. And it just gets me emotional, and it's really cool. And it's hard to explain what sports do, you know. They just bring people together, and I'll remember this forever. What about you guys?
Yeah, Brady, you can go where I can go. Up to you.
I mean, shoot, I get emotional talking about it too. I mean, like Brett said, we used to go to games with our granddad all the time, and he loved the Rangers. And now, sure, he probably would have quit watching by the end of the season because of the relief pitching was so bad. And that was, even when we had good relief pitching, he always thought we were going to blow every single game. So I can only imagine what he would have been saying this year. But it was emotional. It makes me think of all the times that we sat there and we would, you know, we'd watch him blow a game and it would hurt. And it's like, man, we just we paid money and we just hearts ripped out. And I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of memories with baseball, like Brett was saying. To be fair, we probably have a lot of similar ones, like our going to the cages. That's something that I remember. And it's just, baseball is a special sport for me. And the Rangers are really the only team professionally that I would call like my team. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of the Cowboys. I'm a fan of the Mavericks, but the Rangers are like my team. I've been to tons of games. I've never been to any Cowboys games or anything, so I don't really have that attachment. And I was at a watch party when it happened, and I probably like 10 people out of 40 were actual fans of baseball, and probably like two of us were fans of the Rangers. And so I'm sitting there watching and we clinched the game, and I'm like I'm getting emotional, and some tears are running down my face, and everyone's like looking like, what's up with this guy? I'm just like, dude, don't understand right now. You can't understand what I'm going through. And so it was magical.
No, I think I'm on the same playing field as you guys, and saying that, you know, of course, like I said, I'm a fan of the Cowboys, and I don't watch basketball too much, but if the Dallas Mavericks go, I'll watch them just because I'm a competitive guy. But I'm a Longhorn fan at heart, of course, right? So when they won their championships, I was a little kid at the time. You know, I didn't really truly understand what it meant when the Longhorns won in 05, right? Like Brett said, it goes back to all those moments, those emotions come up with, like, your family who you've been with to games, like my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, you know, all the times in the batting cage, or, you know, whenever I actually was on a little league team that was the Texas Rangers, right? It's every little thing that bottled up into one, and it's like the bottle just got too full and just exploded, right? And so I'm only a true fan of the Texas Rangers. I'm not a really true fan of any other professional sports team like I am the Rangers. And so I was communicating with my mom and dad whenever they won, hoping they were still awake watching it. It's like I was screaming through the phone, called them, and was like, hey, like, we finally did it. And, you know, it was like an understanding that we didn't have to speak to say of, like, that connection of us going to the games, watching them win, watching them lose, pennants, and games in general, and watching the high and low of 2010, 2011, and until now. And it was just like an unspoken feeling that, like Brett said, it's hard to describe unless you have been in that position, right? And it's what sports are all about. I think, to me, that's what sports are all about, is that type of emotion, that type of feeling, and that emotion that comes with it when sports is able to connect with you in that way, I should say, right? That's, to me, that's what it's a big part of what sports is about, is that huge connection and what it does in your life, right? So for me, I'm on the same wavelength as you guys, and just bringing up memories from all the hard work you put in, even though I'm not a Texas Ranger, right? All the hard work you put in with your dad, your grandfather, whoever, right? Moms, even. It just was like, I'm part of this team. I'm part of the Rangers. Like, I spent my blood, sweat, and tears doing all this. And when my team wins, dang it, I'm going to celebrate just like they celebrate. And I'm gonna enjoy it. And I'm going to get all the merch I can and, you know, collect as much stuff I can and, you know, be as close to that team as possible. Because I'm never going to forget the lineups that we had, the bullpen that we had, the starting pitching, the starting staff we had, the coaches. I'm never going to forget that, you know. You know, I'll remember the other coaches back in the day, but I'm never going to forget this team and what that emotion did for me.
And and David Freeze can't hurt us anymore.
And, you know, Adolis took that record.
That's right. Yep. I love it. How can we keep it rolling? We going to win next year too?
I mean, so I'll go ahead and say this. I was expecting us to win next year and not this year. So
if you listen to my preview podcast, that's what I said. I said, I think we're probably a year or two away from winning the whole thing.
Yep.
And I was wrong. Let's go. Yeah.
In the best way, you were wrong.
Yeah, I've been texting a friend all year, which you guys, of course, will know him. But I've been texting a friend all year. And, you know, we got to about All-Star break. He's like, dude, we're looking good. Like, we're looking really good. I was like, I don't know. We got a bunch of rookies, a bunch of young guys, I should say. And I think it might just fall off. If the MLB is going to figure us out, it's just going to fall off. We lost to Grom. We're just going to fall off the table. So I was like, you know, next year, the whole year, even through the playoffs. I kid you not. I hated saying it. But I was like, I hope I'm wrong. I even texted him, I hope I'm wrong. But I was like, next year. So, and speaking of next year, man, I got high hopes. I do, because it's the year I was looking for. Since like 2020, and a new stadium was built, I was looking forward to next year. And so we'll have to see what happens in the off season with signings and go from there. But I got high hopes for next year.
Hey, we're playing with house money. We won this year. We're way ahead of schedule. And I think we got I don't want to jinx it, but it looks like we got a 10-year window here for real.
Yep.
Of like maybe having chances every year,
especially young talent coming through the minor league system.
Yeah, and we've got these two studs locked in for a while. It's just crazy. So, I mean, we're returning almost everybody. The only person we're going to lose is Garver,
And it's maybe like Montgomery.
Potentially Jordan Montgomery.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe.
But we only had him half of the year, though. I mean, he was huge. He was huge. Don't get me wrong. I would love to get him back. But, you know, I was just thinking, like, to win a World Series and only lose two key players seems big. I mean, it's huge.
And Garver is a key player, but I don't think he's one of those guys in our lineup that was like, we have to have him there. I mean, we literally didn't play him every night. So it's like, I don't want to lose him because at the end of the year, he proved to be our best option in the DH.
Yep.
But also, like, maybe Duran can step in this year and give us something there, or, you know,
just, I mean, when we get Shohei, it'll be a step up for sure.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean,
what do y'all think the actual chance of us getting Shohei is?
I think 1 in 5.
1 in 5. That's a 1 in 5. That's a lot.
I think 1 in 5. I mean, I think he likes what we're about, and like, he likes our team. I don't. If he comes,
nobody knows what he likes.
If he comes here, I'm not expecting a long-term contract.
I don't think that's true, Brett. I think someone was talking about three teams that he actually like said that he wants to, like, he's interested in.
I think we were one, weren't we?
I saw that report come out.
I don't know if we were one, but we were one of the three.
Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry.
I think the Dodgers have the highest chance of getting him.
Yeah, because he likes
on the coast where, you know, it's not too bad of a time difference.
To fly to Japan.
They have the money. Yeah, to Japan, sorry. They have the money. Their weather is good. Like,
they won a World Series.
They got 3 years ago. They're good. So I think they have the best chance. But I feel like he said Boston Red Sox were a team that he liked. I think those were the other top team with us.
No, I think it was the Cubs, right? I've heard the Cubs a lot.
I've heard the Cubs are very interested. I just thought, I don't know. Sure. There's a few teams that, you know, are rumored, so.
How about Shohei doesn't come here, goes to the Dodgers, and then Kershaw comes here for a year or two?
Oh, man. I know you're not a big basketball fan, but it reminds me of when we got Darren Williams finally at the end of his career, and he was just not very good.
There was always
rumors he was going to come, and then he finally did, and it was like, okay, he's at the end of his career. He just finally gets to play for the Texas team.
But hey,
and that's how I'd fear about Kershaw.
Hey, home cooking though. I mean, Highland Park. I mean,
I like Kershaw, but I think he's at the end of his career. I mean, the last taste we got of him was him getting absolutely demolished in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he gets injured. So, but I'm just saying, put that up. It's because I love Kershaw. I love him as a human.
I think for me, it's Ohtani number one, and then Montgomery number two, and like
same.
I think Ohtani. I think there's a real shot, especially because he plays so well in our stadium. Like
he does.
Go watch the tape, Ohtani. Why would you not want to play at that stadium every couple games? Like, dude, you hit absolute nukes to every part of the field.
Yeah, I was there.
It's so true.
I was there the game he hit the farthest opposite field home run. It's like the upper deck above the bullpen when he hit an oppo home run. I was there, and I was sitting with a friend of mine. I was like, he hit that farther than most guys pull that baseball. Holy cow. Like, he hit that thing, like, I think it was like 118, 119 miles an hour off the bat, oppo. I was like, holy cow.
He's literally the best player we've ever seen play. Like, I think
best player ever. I mean, just saying something, best player ever. No.
I think so too. Yeah.
Like, because I mean,
can you imagine if he was a Texas Ranger? Can you imagine him in a Texas Ranger uniform? After Brett, we won the World Series, I would be insufferable.
Brett,
I would not talk about anything else.
I couldn't imagine Jacob DeGrom at first. Don't do this to me. Okay?
I know.
But
I remember when we were signing DeGrom, I was texting my family and Brett. He's a big, like, I don't want to listen to the rumor stuff, you know, like you said about Ohtani.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I think we have a real shot. And he's like, I'll believe it whenever we sign him. And finally we
sure did. Enough.
And
I
was like, what did I tell you? Oh. If that happens with Ohtani, oh my goodness.
I'm going to go nuts. I might pass out. I was just saying that right now. I might pass out. even if it's for like a year or two, I'm going to pass out. Like, but
that stadium would be packed every single day.
You know,
every
it would
single
be.
Game.
Yeah. You know, it would be. I say, okay, so Chris Young.
It might anyways be.
Yeah. Hey, CY, if you're listening to this podcast, by the way, okay, go listen to Brett, his podcast, Chris Young, okay, if you're listening, okay, do about 2 years, okay, give him a little change, you know, some good money for 2 years, and then that second year he can come back and pitch for us too. And so I will say this, though, besides Ohtani, if we do not get him, I would very much like to see Josh Hader in my bullpen.
See, I used to think, like, oh, man, you got to get some lockdown closers. But after the crap that was pulled this year, it's made me think, like, it's all mental. Josh Hader could be incredible and then one day just decide, I got the yips and suck. You know, it's like the bullpen has got to be the most inconsistent thing in baseball. It's the weirdest position. It's the weirdest position. Because it's like they're important, but also they're unpredictable. They're like, you got to pay them, but you can't pay them too much. It's just a weird, weird position.
But also this, how many times is it going to happen to where, you know, we're the worst bullpen in the league, and then we go into the playoffs and then become the best bullpen in the league, right? So for me, just because it scared me so much, you need to add Josh Hader and then go find some other guys. Like,
I would love it, but I'd be scared that we'd be ending up wasting money on a pitcher that's below average. Because I just think that that closers, they're just so unpredictable. You know, it's like,
no, I'll get it.
One year Chapman sucks, and the next year he's the best closer, and then the next year he's okay, and then the next year he's amazing.
Yeah. I will say this, Hader's been consistent. Hader's been pretty consistent, though. I will say that. But how about this interesting, just to get your thought, we're talking about the future in our minor league system. So, of course, we have Rocker and Leiter. How about
We can't develop pitchers, man.
How about Langford comes up and takes first base?
First base?
First base.
I don't want to first base Nathaniel Lowe. Nathaniel Lowe's great.
I know he's great. But either he helps out with first base or he just helps out with the outfield. He's fast enough to play center field, but I like Tavares. I do like Tavares. I can't not. It's hate to knock on the guys that just won you the World Series. And I know that I just said first base, but like, I feel like his bat could be very helpful once he gets to, like, he moved up to the ranks pretty quick.
Oh, he's good. So, I want him on our team. Maybe, I just don't know where he fits right now.
Maybe take the DH from Garver, right?
And then rotate your outfielders?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, could happen. Yeah, I don't know. I love him.
And Tavares is so young, too. It's like,
Everybody
it's
is.
It's a logjam out there. It's an embarrassment of riches.
But I do like Wyatt Langford for coming up, though. I wanted to say that. So
yeah, I think I gotta get used to him. He knocked out Tech out of the World Series last year, so
I
still don't like him that much. Yeah,
I got a two mag because
I gotta see him in the Ranger. I gotta see him in the Ranger uniform before I think I like him.
Yeah,
I'm already sold on him. I like the guy. I think I don't necessarily agree with him taking the first base position. I think I like Nathaniel Lowe. I mean, I guess because Leody's younger than Lowe, maybe that's the argument there. But
I know
Lowe's deceptively young, though.
Yeah,
he's like 28, right?
Yeah. He's just got a receipt hairline, but
he won a Gold Glove, right?
Yeah, he won a Gold Glove. Yeah,
and he won a Silver Slugger the year before.
One of the worst first basemans in the league to one of the best, best, I guess.
That's probably why.
That's crazy.
That's probably why I wasn't really – that's why I said first base, because at first I just remembered he won a Gold Glove. So I might have scratched that and just say, hey, take Garver.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I get Nathaniel Lowe kind of let us down on the bat towards the end of the year. But you got to remember, just last year, he was a Silver Slugger.
Sure.
And now he's 100%. A Gold Glover.
And it wasn't like he sucked this year. Like, he was still pretty good at hitting. He was good. He fell off towards the
end a little bit, but he still had some important hits. And
he carried us in the beginning a little bit.
Yeah, he did. And so I think it's just kind of one of those things where Langford, when he gets called up, will kind of have – I think Adolis will get a lot of days off in the outfield because he's really good in the outfield, but I also think he had a few plays this year where it's like, you know, maybe he needs a break because – he got hurt a few times or tweaked something a few times, and it's like
he's just a ball of muscle.
Yeah, he might push Tavares because Langford's pretty freaking fast. Like, he's sneaky fast. Like, he's a big dude, but he's sneaky fast.
No, I think Tavares is the one who's in the most danger of losing his spot, even though he played great.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, without losing a spot, I think that's kind of where he fits in, and maybe just give the outfield some rest days in general.
Sure.
It's hard to put a young guy in a DH role. So that's kind of why I go to Adolis. But I don't know. It's
if he's not getting every day at bats, though, I don't think they'll bring him up.
No.
I agree. No. I agree. Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things like Evan Carter where somebody someone gets down. Hurt
yep.
and he comes up and then he gets every day at bats. And then they're like, well,
what do we do?
Yeah. And so then they'll just start plugging them in wherever they can. But
yeah, and I'm excited for Leiter and Rocker since we drafted them in the same draft. I mean, I know that we have starting pitching. And DeGrom will get, you guys talked about earlier before we started this podcast, that he'll come around. You guys said possibility July, if not later in the year?
They said optimistically July, but
there you go.
But more than likely, like right before the playoffs.
Sure.
Like
Sure. Yeah. Which even then, coming off of Tommy John, it's even tough to come off that and, you know, just immediately.
Yeah, I feel like they'll shut him down unless something crazy happens.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm excited because of what we already have and excited for what's to come because I like Rocker and Kumar. I watched those guys play to Vandy, man, and just tear it up. Like when Texas went to the World Series and Vandy had Rocker and Leiter, I was like, these guys are going to win. I don't want to play them. Like, I don't want to play them. I mean, they shut guys left and right out at D1 level, like a high D1 level. So I know there's a lot of other guys that we can talk about, but for future-wise, I think we're in a really good spot.
I think outside of maybe Ohtani and Montgomery. And I get Josh Hader, but I also kind of agree with Brett. It's very unpredictable with closers or relievers.
Sure.
And I believe that we found our relievers. I think Leclerc and Spores will anchor the bullpen. They did incredible in the playoffs. And I don't know, I think they can anchor it. But this is kind of funny or weird to say, but Brett hit on it earlier. I think our biggest need is a developmental pitching coach in the minors because we have those guys you're talking about, but they don't look great in the minors. Like Leiter has been hit around and they shut him down for a while to work on his mechanics. And we have a guy named Brock Porter, I believe. And he's actually, I think, our top pitching prospect right now because we haven't been able to develop those people. And so,
say we've been terrible for so long. We draft a ton of pitchers and none of them work out.
Yeah.
So I think if they
go somewhere, and we see it with Cole Reagans, we trade him away and
the
dude
really
becomes just a Cy Young Award candidate.
Helped us
a little bit, honestly,
this year.
He could have been. And it's just like, I think our biggest need is someone that can develop pitchers that are young like that.
Agreed.
That would change our, I mean, I think everyone needs that. Don't get me wrong, but that would change our window to even longer.
Sure.
Because we got a lot of young guys that are just
need a little. I was thinking that 10-year window is if those guys pan out, you know, like we have a lot of guys in the minors that have to pan out, but it looks good right now. It looks set up.
Question for you guys. Say Ohtani gets off the board. Throughout the whole year, I always thought we were at least one, if not two bats away from winning it all. Of course, here we are. We won it. Right, so I was wrong on that end, which I'm glad I was.
Heck, do
you guys think even going next year? Of course, there's a next man up mentality. Even going into next year, having the best offense in the AL, do you think we still need one to two bats, or do you think we're solid around?
Who do you need to take out of the lineup?
I mean, I would like to not see Robbie Grossman in there at any point in time.
Exactly, our DH.
Yeah, DH. Because Garver's not coming back, so I'd say DH, and that's the one bat. I said one to two. And
I mean, I was about to say, other DH than that,
one, yeah,
you can't bat. You can't pitch around these guys. Like you got Josh Young batting eighth in the World Series. You know, like All Star third baseman.
You got Jonah Heim, who was struggling at the end of the year, but he's one of the best hitters at the catching position, and that's where it's like, well, I wish we could pinch it for our catcher. Well, guess what? We don't need to do that.
No,
we
got a hitter
there. No, so it's, but yeah, I really, our offense is locked down, and especially if Wyatt comes up and plays for us, like I mean, that's nine batters that you can't pitch around.
So
now, obviously, they'll go through slumps, ebbs and flows, but there was times when Tavares was like, you couldn't get him out.
Sure.
Even in the playoffs, he had a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean,
he had a few home runs. So in that case, if it's just a DH, just kind of playing off your guys' brains here for a second, if it's just a DH, typically veterans are going to be the ones that come into that role, right? They're not going to be playing in the field a whole lot. So what, is there a veteran that comes to mind, which you already have a few on the team, is there a veteran that comes to mind that would be a good fit for this team? Kind of put you guys on the spot.
Yeah, I've been holding out for Ohtani. I haven't even let myself look at
who's available. He's off the board. If he's off the board.
Yeah.
Which I guess we're hoping for Ohtani, right? But I guess he can't be too hopeful, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to agree with Brett. I haven't really thought about that because
I just figured
my thought is more like if we don't get Ohtani, and I think it's kind of funny to say this because we have a lot of starting pitchers, but mm-hmm. I want more starting pitching. I mean, we have a lot of starting pitching, but also do we? We had a two-man rotation and then bullpen games in the playoffs.
Yeah,
I want to see pushing those another guy come positions. In. Yeah, and we're losing one of those guys that went the six innings consistently. And so I really want Montgomery back. And if we don't get him, I think we need to find another guy that can help anchor that starting rotation because
Blake Snell.
I think that's the game changer.
I like Blake
Snell.
I'd
love Blake Snell.
If we could get Snell, absolutely. Is he a free agent this year?
Yeah, he is.
Dude just won the Cy Young.
Yeah. Blake Snell, and he was fantastic in Tampa. I watched him pitch against the Dodgers when the Dodgers won the World Series. And the moment they took him out, I looked over at my dad, and I was like, the Dodgers are going to win this game. Like, as soon as they took him out, I was like, that was stupid. Like, they couldn't touch him. And then all of a sudden, here comes the Dodgers, and they won the World Series that game. I was like, what are we doing? Like, one of the biggest, like, just, like, dumbest decisions I've seen. Like, and I'm not even, like, a manager at that level. But, no, Blake Snell is out there. Sonny Gray is out there. Who just came off a good year. He's been iffy in the past, but he's had a obviously fantastic year. Montgomery, of course, we'd love to have. I mean, could just come back to us, man. Just come back to us. But I can't remember who else is out there. But, yeah, I agree with you on that because a couple of those guys that are already in our, if you will, starting rotation just came out the bullpen. I think it's Heaney and they put Perez back on the starting rotation as of right now, right? Just for who we have.
Probably
right?
Dunning.
Yeah, Dunning. Yeah. That's right. It was Dunning. That's right. So, yeah, I can agree with that too.
All right. Well, anything else y'all want to add before we wrap it up for the off season?
Go Rangers.
Yeah, we're
Go Rangers.
Champions until next September.
World champions.
World champs, baby. Defend the title.
All right. I'm going to fade it out to Eric Nadell's brilliant call of the World Series win. And see y'all later.
Two balls, two strikes. Spores kicks and fires. He struck him out looking. It's over. It's over. The Rangers have won the World Series. Ranger fans, you're not dreaming. The Rangers are the World Series champions. After 52 years in Texas, 63 years of the franchise, the wait is over. And the celebration has begun.
Straight up 8 o'clock in the Mountain Standard Time Zone, 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 10 o'clock back home in Texas. Josh Spores wraps it up, and the Rangers are your World Series champions. Can you believe it? Wow.
May the ghosts of 2011 be forever erased.